Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com today.
Welcome to the Lorehounds Podcast, your source for the Immaculate Infection. I'm John.
I'm David, and that was one of the best jokes of the episode.
It was. They were really, I think the first episode lacked some of that, like, really quippy and quick dialogue. Mm-hmm. This episode had more of it, and I appreciated that.
That was in my notes, that how funny this episode was.
Yeah, it had a lot of good moments. It had a lot of moments that I'm like, oh, I see exactly where this is going. we'll get there. But what'd you think of the episode?
Well, I guess, too, we should just remind folks that we're kind of doing a more of a vibes check, less analysis, more reaction podcast for the Pitt series season two. So if you're expecting deep dives, this ain't it. This is just John and I having a good time reacting to the episodes. I've only seen it once, watched it last night. I assume the same for you.
Why don't we call them triage episodes?
Okay, there you go. I like that, triage.
We're not doing the full treatment. We're just figuring out what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for the overall vibe check on the episode, it was interesting. Like we were mentioning, it's a funny episode. I feel like the level of what's the right word? It's not. I don't know how to describe it, but the confronting the audience with the physical realities of what patients come into the emergency room with is really in your face this season. They showed us a few things last season, and I just before the season started, I did episode one, and then what was it, 15 episodes? So I think I watched 14 and 15, so 1, 14, and 15. And there was some, you know, medical stuff, but it wasn't bad. And I just feel they've turned the dial up a couple of notches this season. Lots of interpersonal relationship seeding, little quips, little comments, little engagements. There was the one doctor who was in the wheelchair that had a little something with Robbie, obviously with Nurse Noelle Hastings. But there was some other stuff that was in there, so they're laying a lot of track for building dramatic tension for later on in the season. And of course, they're also seeding all of the medical drama for what's to come in the season as well. Obviously, the baby is going to be a big one, you know, carrying through. And it seems like Louis, I'm really, really nervous for Louis. I'm really nervous for Whitaker. So we'll see where all that goes. So yeah, I think it was still laying track work, starting to set those characters and those tensions into motion, starting the wind up feature, so that at some point the spring's going to release and then a lot of stuff is going to happen. I have some specific thoughts about Dr. Al that I want to unload on. But otherwise, I want to hear your general takes as well.
Can I ask you, did Dr. Al-Hashimi say to call her Dr. Al at some point? Because isn't that like not really good etiquette for like Farsi names? Because isn't it basically like saying like Dr. Van for like Van
Gogh or something? You know what I mean? Yeah. No, I get it. That's a good point.
I feel like it's like the, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's really like.
It's a very American thing to do. I worked at one point with people in Germany and in the German government. And I sent an email one day to an assist, you know, to somebody who worked for a high level government person. And he and I had been working together for a little bit. And I had my boss CC'd on the email, and I just said, you know, I forget the guy's name, hey, Joe, or whatever. I gave a first name thing. My boss came, like 5 minutes later, my boss came ripping into my office, and he was like, that was the wrong thing to do. He did not give you permission to do that. Mm-hmm. You are not on a familiar basis with him. This is a high government official. Don't do that again. And then I was like, wow. Because as an American, I'm just like, you know, oh, hey, you know, Bob, you know, hey, Jim, you know, whatever. Or hey, Mary, you know, we just go on first name basis. So I think for that senior attending resident, Dr. Al-Hashimi, would be, if you're a junior, yeah, you would do well to have a little bit of etiquette and not call her Dr. Al. So, but I don't remember in the show if she gave anybody that permission. That's a
good question. I don't remember her doing that, but I could be wrong. I've only noticed Dr. Robbie doing it.
Yeah, he says, you know, right away, call me Dr. Robbie.
Right. No, I'm saying I only noticed him calling her Dr. Al.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I'm wrong. Again, these are vibe check episodes. These are not, you know, deep dives. We haven't had a chance to rewatch or anything. But I also noticed that no one is pronouncing her name correctly, even when they use her full name. Everyone is saying Dr. Al-Hashimi, and I didn't even pronounce it right before. And I think the way she pronounced it was Dr. Al-Hashimi.
Okay.
Which is different, right? And you know,
Yeah. The emphasis of the syllable.
Yeah, and I do think that those are subtle microaggressions that we should take note of, intended to.
All right,
right?
Well, let's
not even go if they're not intended to.
Yeah. They're little.
They slides. Can be microaggressions.
Sure.
Anyway, and it's interesting because obviously Dr. Robbie is a shortening of his last name, right? It is.
Right.
He says Rabin. I'm casual, but she's clearly not casual. She's clearly by the book. With everything and very like, I have to be on the cutting edge of technology, as we'll talk about. But I think that the reason they have Dr. Al as something that she's called at least semi-frequently is this AI thing, right? Because Al, when it's written
AI,
it's written lowercase L looks kind of like AI. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's where we're going here.
It's a little too cute by half. There was some internet conjecture, right? The, you know, Reddit's going to Reddit. But somebody was like, is she a robot?
Yeah.
Oh, dear Lord, no. Come on. That's not this show. But, you know, I mean, is there a wink and a nod? Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
I don't put that past them.
I have been spoiled a little bit on the main crisis of this season because of the trailer. Like, the trailer kind of alludes to what the main crisis of this season is likely to be.
Okay. I have not. I watched the trailer, but I didn't process it at that level.
And I think, should I say it? I think it's implied in the trailer. This is not a production spoiler.
I think it was sort of, it's sort of around a 4th of July related.
Oh, I don't think so. It is the 4th of July. I think that's going to be a part of it, but I don't think it's going to be.
Save it. I don't want to, I would prefer to not.
That's fine. No. That's fine. All I'm going to say is I think that her whole approach is going to be screwed up very quickly. And I think that both she and Dr. Robbie are going to learn a lot from each other in that experience.
Right, which goes into your theory about Robbie's growth trajectory for this season and goes into the helmet and, you know, on the motorcycle and all that stuff.
Right.
Can we, since we're kind of here, and I'm going to pronounce it Al-Hashimi for now, and if that's incorrect, it's not a microaggression. It's like, I'm not sure on the correct pronunciation. Dr. Al-Hashimi, I like her character. I like the actor. The portrayal is great. The thing that I push back on a little bit from the writers and the way that the character is set up, I kind of reject the trope of a competent woman in any field who is a busybody who looks past the human qualities towards the efficiencies and improving things and that kind of stuff. And then you have Robbie, who's chill and he's a, you know, trust your gut and I believe in my students and all of this kind of stuff. And I get the tension and I'm okay with the tension of having somebody who has mad experience in the ER for many, many years and knows when to intubate and not to intubate, or, you know, to give certain drugs and not certain drugs to do a whatever it is, get the thing out of the guy's throat.
Yeah.
versus, you know, oh, you know, there's somebody who's, yeah, I'd like to make some improvements. Let me check it out for a little bit. And I get that this is dramatic tension and this is a television show and we have a certain number of episodes, but I just kind of, I'm a little disappointed that the writers went so easily to using a woman character as the busybody and then setting her in opposition to Robbie as the cool heroic character. Just not my favorite setup, because I think Dr. Al-Hashimi seems to be a very competent doctor and has a very good eye on improving patient outcomes and satisfaction among populations and helping the hospital move along. Those are all excellent goals. And if there's a couple of tools that need to be used or whatever, you know, integrating those and learning the way that things work here and like, hey, you know, gentle pushing, gentle nudging forward or whatever the strategies are. It just kind of rubs me wrong a little bit that they're setting up a competent woman character into this potential position to fail against Robbie's folksy medicine, you know, aw shucks kind of guy.
That's
my rant.
I see your rant and I meet it with something, which is, I'm going to reserve judgment on that because I do think that what they're doing is they're going to make us very frustrated with Dr. Al-Hashimi.
Okay.
And then they are going to give her an arc that makes us perhaps like her better than Robbie.
I could see that. That would be the hand of the writer is definitely present there. I could see that.
There's that. And there's also, I think I disagree with some of your characterization because she is, you know, she is really like uppity about, you know, let's incorporate the AI. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let me shadow you on all your cases instead of.
And even that word that you used, right? Like that, that's a word, right?
I know.
It has connotations. And
well, I use it gender neutrally. I've met many uppity men too.
Okay.
but yeah, I mean,
just like, since we've strayed into this territory of tropes and gender norms and things like
yeah, that. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Intentional. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I actually think that she is more empathetic than you're implying because she
Oh no, I'm saying the character is great. It's the trope that I'm
I get you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying like Dr. Robbie is very mission oriented. Mm-hmm. And I think he has his big moments with the patients, right? He has his big connection moments.
Yeah, like in season one with the sort of ritual around death and passing that was so beautiful. Like I was bawling my eyes out during that episode.
He does have those big moments, but his patient satisfaction scores are abysmally low. And I think part of that is he is really good at the, you know, small intimate moments with people when he has the time. And he doesn't know how to do that on a global scale. Mm. And I think Dr. Al-Hashimi is perhaps better, going to be better at making the patient feel seen in the general treatment.
Sure. The passports is an evidence of that sort of thing. Like know what to expect and how long it might take.
Right. Robbie is very good at like in tragic moments being there for someone. Mm. But I don't think he's actually very much there in the normal
administration.
Moments, right.
Yeah.
I mean, you see him, he walks away the minute his interns have it under control. Mm-hmm. He's like, all right, you got it. I'm good. Let's go. And from an efficiency of treatment standpoint, that's probably right. But from a patient satisfaction, having the doctor run out the minute that you're not in crisis might not feel great. Mm. So I do think that Dr. Al-Hashimi probably does a better job of the moment to moment empathy and patient satisfaction aspect, whereas he does better at the big moments.
So I think the opening scene with the baby, the cliffhanger from hour 7 to 8 to 8 to 9. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of speculation too. Is she about to have a seizure? Did she see? Is it incredibly virulent outbreak of some like horrific disease? Like, oh, what, what's going on? Why did she freeze?
Not in episode one.
Yeah, exactly. And it's. No, she just felt really empathetic for the baby.
Right. Yeah. I laughed at the seizure thing, not because seizures aren't serious, but because I was like, that's not this show. Mm, right. It's not, that's like a,
That's ERE thing.
Right, yeah. Because it's just such a sudden twist out of nowhere that would be like, all right, we're, you know, this is getting off the rails in episode one. Whereas this show is much better at being grounded and like the twists make sense.
Mm. And they build over the course of the season, right? Over the course of the day.
Yeah.
So anyway. I think for her, in that moment, I thought I saw some tears in her eye, or she was very verklempt. And she was just trying to be in that moment with her emotional response. And then, you know, knowing that, hey, as a human being, I'm feeling something right now. And as a doctor and a senior medical person on this floor, I need to keep that in balance and I need to keep that in check a little bit. So I felt, I kind of read the end of that was her just trying to, you know, get that moment of clarity saying, yeah, I'm feeling something, but I need to stay focused at being a doctor here. So that was my interpretation.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think that's enough on Dr. Al-Hashimi. We just have to see more from her and more from Robbie on their intersection, because I do think that this is going to be like,
I agree.
It's going to be, we're going to be rooting for her and being like, Robbie, get the fuck on your motorcycle and get out of here.
GTFO.
By the end of the season.
Why didn't you finish your hot take for the episode overall?
I don't know. I'm going on vibes. I thought it was a setup episode. I said to you before this, I was like, I don't think there's actually a lot to talk about this episode. I mean, there's stuff with...
there's stuff. Yeah.
There's stuff with Mel. Like, again, it's all set up. Like, Mel obviously had her flirty moment and she's nervous about her Mel practice suit. And then she has that intersection with Langdon. And Langdon, of course, being really wholesome. I think anyone shipping them is wrong. And I agree.
He's protective of her.
And, yes, he is. This is a mentor-mentee relationship.
Friend. At a level of friendship, too.
Yeah.
As well as senior to junior doctors.
Yeah. I think that's right. I also appreciated that he... And I don't think it was an overprotective thing. I think it was he noticed patterns with her last season where she needs to take a beat after a shocking
he turned off the light
and he said, okay, less stimulation, go sit for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Just 10 minutes. Just go. I thought that was great. He's really, really interesting this season.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, there's a lot of speculation online as to whether he got divorced. He did not have a ring on when he came into the building and when he went into his locker, and then he was wearing one once he was in treatment mode. So some people are speculating he's putting on the ring so that people don't ask questions.
Interesting. That could be possible.
He's not wearing it normally.
Right, right. Oh, that's
he's not wearing his kid's bracelet either.
Wow. Wow. People are, that's the benefit of of close watching. I did not do that with this episode. That's really good. I did notice that he covered his badge in a weird way when he was talking to Jawadi, and it wasn't Santos. Who was it there? I can't remember who. But anyway, he said, oh, and somebody was like, oh, and Whitaker. Maybe it was Whitaker, because Whitaker's actually stepped up to being to be called doctor, and Jawadi's still in progress.
Jawadi,
thank you. The way that he crossed his arms, and he, what it looked like to me, intentionally cupped his identification badge, and I replayed it really quickly, which says, you know, in green and white, doctor. And he covered it over in a really weird way. And I was like, what is that about? I just don't know what to make of it.
I wonder if it's going to be like no pharmacy access or something like that.
Yeah. Can you get demoted as a doctor, like in a military rank? Like,
I have no idea.
Busted
someone
down?
Write in. Someone write in who knows about that.
Please. We know we have medical professionals in our listener audience.
I know. So. I know.
I was going to add with Langdon too, and the Mel conversation.
Mm-hmm.
They're really playing my heartstrings with Langdon this season so far. And he's trying to do the work of, you know, being, going through recovery and doing the all of the social repairing. And, it's really moving me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he is making a genuine attempt to make things right. And I appreciate that. I think Robbie is still being a dick to him, obviously. Just shutting
Santos
him down every
time. Avoiding him.
Right. Santos is avoiding him. And I don't blame her. I mean, I too would fear retaliation at that point. I do think that they're going to like come together by the end of the season. Fingers I think crossed. she and or Robbie will be the last two people he apologizes to. And that will close out his arc.
Right. I got it. Yep. That makes sense.
I think he's going to apologize to her for giving her a hard time. And I think he's going to thank her for saying like, and be like, thank you for making me get help.
She was kind of a, it wasn't clean necessarily, but she did get him into a position where he needed to, which was into recovery and to legally and ethically and personally take care of the things that he needed to take care of. And without Santos, he wouldn't be there. But the pathway was very human.
Right.
I guess we could say very messy.
Right. That's fair. I think that Whitaker, I have no idea where they're going with. I'm just going to say that. I have no idea where they're going with him. He seems in a really safe place right now, which means something terrible is going to happen to him next episode.
Exactly. Things going really well, which means...
Santos, I think, has a little bit of growing up to do externally, but has grown a lot internally, it seems like. She's not jumping the gun as much in terms of treatment. She does, though, still need to, you know, check all her boxes on, like, suspicions on people, right? Like, she needs to make sure that she's doing it right.
And with that child who has the chin laceration and the worry about some child abuse situation going on there, you really feel her stepping up and stepping into making sure that this kid is okay. And if there's a problem, and she's going to lean into assuming that there's a problem until proven wrong, but that's that sort of fierce advocate that sometimes you want in the world, you know, looking after kids in these complex situations. And right. I was kind of admiring her this episode for rather than because didn't she get offered a couple of exciting cases and she's like, no, I got to take care of this kid. And that really
The
character.
Yeah, that is growth. And I think she's growing.
And someone funny.
Someone who she is funny. The immaculate infection killed me.
So good.
But anyway, someone who I do think needs a growth arc this season is Javadi. I mean,
yeah.
You know, like, I just feel like she is, second to Robbie, she feels the most unchanged from last season.
Mm-hmm.
And she needs an arc where she learns that, like, being book smart is not the end-all be-all. And I think what they did with Ogilvy is he's going to be her foil. He's going to be the know-it-all that she realizes she doesn't want to be.
Okay.
Right. The one who is brown nosing and is, you know, constantly trying to recite from textbooks instead of deal with the actual problem in front of you.
Yeah.
And I mean, like the way she talked to Santos, like Santos had been mean to her, so I don't blame her for having a little bit of a chip on her shoulder with Santos. But like, it's like, why? Just because you don't think you can do a double specialty? She goes, yeah. And he goes, oh, because you're a genius? Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I'll just say this. And like, I don't want to be like old man on hill yelling, but like, there is a reason that we like to have some experience, life experience with a lot of these kinds of professions.
Agreed.
Which is that like, it takes a while to get good at being interpersonal with people, right?
Mm.
Even if you are extremely book smart, it is... Your age does matter. Your young age does matter in the sense that you haven't not met a lot of people from different walks of life. And the ER is, I think, a speed run to meeting people from all walks of life and to developing your interpersonal relationships. So I'm almost surprised, and maybe this is the fault of the writers, that she has not grown more since last season. And maybe we will see growth shine in this season. Maybe they said, we just want to do that on camera, and that's why they didn't have her grow a lot. But I would have liked to see a little bit of development from the writing there.
Right, right. Yeah, and she's sort of in the stuck in the shadow character, the shadow of her mother, who we saw last episode as well. So I think that's a good assessment. She really hasn't, where we've seen both Santos and Whitaker develop in terms of their confidence in the ER and leading other interns, and taking on more and more complex cases.
So, right.
Yeah.
Right. And plus, she's probably led a pretty isolated life. Like, if you're going to college at 13, you can't go to any of the social events. So you don't, and you're not going to be able to make friends really with the 18 to 25 year olds. You don't have any friends from your own age bracket because you're not going to school anymore and you have to dedicate a lot of your time to studying. I just think that she's not had a lot of opportunities to develop these skills of, you know, and so I do think.
And to be able to dish back on Santos as much as Santos is on her, where Santos comes from a roly-poly social world. Didn't she say she had a lot of brothers or something like that? And so
maybe,
there was I get that sense anyway, or just, she's had different challenges in life. And so Santos leans in and finds humor and you rib each other. And that's kind of how you show affection, where Javadi had the opposite of that.
Yeah. She has very thin skin and I don't want to like bash her too much because I do think it's more the writing.
No, she's a great character.
It presents a lot of interesting problems. And I do think that she has a chance to be a really good doctor. It's just that she has to go through an arc similar to Santos has already gone through a bit of an arc and I think probably could use more growth. And Whitaker definitely went through an arc since last season. Although I'm sure that the cracks are going to start to show on that. We already had him missing something in the possible things to look at, right?
Right.
About the blood. Although you're like, okay, but we don't see it, right? So why would I mention it?
And Huckleberry is kind of a less quality nickname as opposed to Crash. Crash is pretty high octane. That's pretty good stuff.
I'd keep Crash. I would keep Crash. You know?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
What, speaking of the junior staff and the interns, I'm really getting confused with what is up with Joy.
I have no idea.
I'm a little bit distressed that they're, you know, putting a young Asian woman into this sort of very disaffected socially and sort of sardonic on the phone, whatever. To be in you're on a rotation. I mean, I don't know what her interest is and what her ultimate specialties are going to be. But I just question what they are doing with this role and with this actor. And I don't understand it yet. I understand the disaffected youth thing, right? And on the phone and whatever. But you can't be a doctor. You can be a doctor that doesn't have empathy, but that's maybe, I don't know. I just don't know what to deal with her.
Yeah, we just haven't seen her enough yet. I that's why I didn't even bring her up. I just have nothing much to say about this.
Yeah.
There's been a few doctors backburnered this episode. I thought McKay was kind of backburnered this episode. Mm-hmm. I am interested in what's going on with Noelle Hastings.
The nurse, she's basically looking out for making sure patients are moving through the system. Yeah.
An interesting, point of, we have to move this guy who's probably going to have to go through pain to move just because his insurance won't pay for this hospital. Of course, this is something that the Europeans shall never understand. But yes, you will sometimes have to move hospitals if your insurance is not going to cover surgery at that hospital.
Yeah, and I'm surprised. Who is the doctor on the end of that? That was objecting to it. Was that
McKay?
No, McKay, right. That she hadn't experienced or known that before. I guess that was a little bit of exposition showing through the thing. Like, that's a setup for us, not a setup for McKay.
I think part of it is, doctors can play the game with insurance, right? They can go.
Well, they have to.
He's just not stable enough. Right. And so we're going to treat him here. And then, but then that creates a huge headache for the patient to try to get that proved as like an emergency bill that they couldn't afford, that they couldn't avoid, things like that. Like there's, plenty of laws that like help you navigate that, but you have to really know what you're doing for that. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is almost a Robbie, not, I don't think it's Robbie trying to like avoid taking care of the patient at the hospital. I think it's Robbie trying to help the patient in the long term,
right,
financially. And it's unfortunate that that he even has to consider that with treatment. It should just be get the treatment that you need where you are.
Right.
But it is what it is. That's our system.
And that's part of what this show is about, is exposing us to the viewers to some of the realities of the modern healthcare delivery system. We have some of the best, healthcare when you can get it to the right people in the right way, right? We have, you know, we can have, when healthcare is delivered effectively and efficiently, we get great outcomes, but our outcomes are ruined because of business, because of monetize. I'm trying not to get too much on my soapbox here, but there's a danger of monetizing, profiteering, mm-hmm. I should say, of people's health. That's a whole issue. So let me not soapbox too much.
I mean, how can you afford the maggots without?
You had to know that was coming.
I knew something like that was coming. Yeah, I knew whatever was under there was going to be disgusting.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. But you know what? Maggots have been a valid treatment for infected wounds.
Yeah,
like that is a real thing. Like they clean the wound. They eat the necrotic flesh
in a very effective way. Better than a braiding or little scalpel work or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, we knew that it was coming though when it happened. So.
Oh, so bad. I will also say, you mentioned the gore of this episode. I looked away with the arm.
The dislocation.
Thing. Yeah. The dislocation. The outer dislocation. Are we kidding?
yeah.
I looked away and then the sound still made me heave. I gagged so hard that my wife started cracking up next to me. She was just laughing at me while I'm like, the sound got me.
Yeah.
I wasn't even watching it. There's a lot of this show where I close my eyes for a second, but usually the sound I can deal with. Nope, not with that one.
Wow. Wow. And it shows you too the physicality of this kind of care to reset a bone. You think of all that muscle and ligament that needs to be pulled. We'll talk further about it.
Talking about it. Yep.
Stop. We can talk about other things, though. I mean, in many ways, it was a very arousing episode.
Oh yeah, somebody was aroused. It wasn't me.
Oh man. But I was like, oh okay. Well, you know, they'll keep the camera level, and then they didn't, and I was like, oh.
Right? Like it was a prosthetic, but
yeah, of course,
that was you know.
But you know what?
Like episode.
I'm sort of. At a meta level, I was okay in the sense of we see all kinds of other anatomy of especially of female bodies on screen, gratuitous use of breasts and behinds and things like that. You know, this is HBO, we're human beings. This is a medical setting. This is a medical show. Yeah, why not show a big old salute the flag boner, right? You know, that is the reality of that situation.
That's
and they're
true.
Not shying away. The camera's not shying away in a lot of ways. And I think if they had kept the camera level so that, you know, just above so that we never saw that, there would have been a little bit of diminishment of the show because they've shown us the bigger quivering bag of worms and, you know, other things. And yeah. I felt that it was not, I didn't feel like it was out of line. It just caught me surprising because we don't see that kind of thing. We don't see boners on a lot of movies and TV shows.
That's the medical term, right? Boners.
Right, boners.
Yeah.
And I love that they were using the medical terms. I forget what they were, but they were being very
priismism. I don't remember what it was.
Very funny.
Yeah, I very funny. I mean, look, guy seems like he's going to be fine, so we can laugh about it.
Did not look like fun.
And it's not gratuitous. David approves this as not gratuitous nudity.
No, it's not. It is in line, I think, with everything else. So, that's fine.
That's fair.
What do you, I don't want to get into too deep of a, I don't know how far we're going to slide into the AI thing of it all.
Oh, that's going to be a disaster by the end of the season. Especially because she's talking about never having been sued for malpractice.
Right?
She's about to get sued so bad.
That was such a tell.
It's Chekhov's malpractice suit.
Exactly. Absolutely. I was like, oh man, really? Okay. Here we go. There's a functional level where, okay, yeah, that's cool. Like, I get it. It's an administrative tool that could speed things up because there is a lot of friction in the system around data entry, data management. And yet the technologies to deploy that in a busy emergency room where you don't have time because they said, oh, you know, she's like, well, you must check very carefully, you know, all the things. Man, like when the ambulances start rolling in, you may have said something and then you know, to go back to check that record.
Right.
You know, that's, I don't know that this is the appropriate setting. Is there a setting, a potential setting for that? Yeah, I think so. But not in one of the busiest emergency rooms. You know, you just don't roll out new, you know, they would never roll out a machine to shock hearts or anything like that that hadn't gone through extensive trials.
Right. Also, it's her first day, like, chill, lady. You know what I mean? Yeah. I do. Some of this is a little unbelievable because I think that the first day anybody goes to a job, they are just going to, like, see what, you know, assess the situation.
That's what you would hope.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm sure there's people who are go-getters, but this doctor seems like she has a good head on her shoulders. And, you know, wait till day two to introduce your AI app, right? Like, see what the situation is at this hospital. And then go for it. And, you know, maybe we'll be told off screen that, like, she already did, like, a tour of the pit and spent a few hours there, but yeah.
Yeah. And that's good strategic planning, right? Is that you can come up with an ideal scenario, but then you do your ground truthing and you observe, and then you can see the gap between the ideal state and the current state. And then you can map your pathway to the ideal state, assuming that that's still the, you know, or adjust your ideal state and then move towards it. And just, instituting wholesale changes at this level that's pretty across three shifts, I would guess, day swing and night shift. There's a whole bunch of process management stuff in here that just sort of makes my head scratch, but it's drama. Well, there's a conceit for the show, so.
Yeah.
Anything else? Yeah,
and like you say, like, there is a misogynistic trope of, like, the go-getter woman getting shut down, and I don't want to fall into that.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that the show is going to subvert that eventually.
I hope so. Because I would like to see Dr. Al-Hashimi succeed.
Yeah.
You know, as a person and as a character.
I think we are going to be cheering for Dr. Al-Hashimi by the end of the season.
But she has to get through, she has to navigate her AI debacle. So
that's right. Yeah, that's right. I think she's going to learn a lot. I think Robbie's going to learn a lot. I think all the people are going to learn a lot. I do want to point out one thing before we go. I don't know if you have much else, but.
Not really. Mel, just little tiny things, but yeah.
Mel talked to a police officer named Officer Underhill. Okay. That is Frodo's fake name from that Lord of the Rings.
And she said she liked the Renfair.
And, well, but I'm wondering, is anyone actually named Underhill, or is the officer not an officer?
Okay, is that, well that's a weird, that would be a weird twist for the show.
What if the kid was actually kid, you know, the grown man that she was treating and that knocked into her, what if he wasn't a criminal, and he's actually being targeted by an undercover fake cop, you know?
All right.
That's not this kind of show, but
this show.
Maybe Underhill was just a fun little thing that they put in, but
I'm very like you said, it's very early in the season, but if anybody hurts Mel, you know, there's a whole internet.
Somebody already did.
Well, you know, and I think there are people on our Discord too. They're like, okay, I'm standing up here for Mel, and if anybody messes with my girl, with my friend here, I'm gonna, you know, go for them. So I'm very nervous for what happens with Mel. I hope she can get back in her groove.
Yeah, I agree. Anything else you got?
Yeah, it's a week. A week is a long. It's hard. I'm like, oh, I want to watch the show, but that's good television, and we got a long run. And I think doing these vibe check episodes, especially with Night of the Seven Kingdoms coming up, I think helps us with our sort of sanity a little bit, so we don't have to put a lot of load time into it. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to the next episode.
Me too. All right, David, it's time for us to say goodbye. We'll see you all next week. Real quick outro. Don't forget about the Night of the Seven Kingdoms coverage that we're doing with Properly Howard. We got plenty going on in there. We're going to be doing the main podcast on this feed and the House of the Dragon feed, or now the Night of the Seven Kingdoms feed. Then the feedback and the instant takes are all going to be on Properly Howard only. And we also have Alicia's Oscars coverage coming up. That's going to be a big one. So she already released, I think, a BAFTA episode. So plenty of content going on if you're into the award season. On our other feeds, of course, Properly Howard's going to be covering A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms with us. We are going to hear more from Radioactive Ramblings on Fallout. And Never Mind the Music has weekly coverage of music. I think they did Shaggy this past week.
Yeah, I think so.
It Wasn't Me, the song. Great song. So go check out all of that. For now, let's do some thank yous, David.
Sounds good. Thank yous to our Discord server boosters, those kind folks who donate their Nitro things or whatever to the server to make it a better and more fun place to hang out. That is our virtual water cooler. If you want to talk about your favorite show, interact with other folks from the Lorehounds community or us, if you want to yell at us about name pronunciation, you are more than welcome to do that politely in the Discord. We welcome corrections. But Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Duve 71, Athena Adjaleya, Lestu, Nancy M, Ghost of Perdition, Radioactive Richard, and Audrion. Thank you all so very much. And our lore masters are top tier subscribers who, without their support, we literally could not produce this. If you are interested in supporting what we do, we are independent podcasters. Ad dollars are fickle, and subscription support really sort of provides us the stability to be able to do everything that we do. And so Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, SC, Peter OH, Nancy M, Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Andra B, Kong Yu, Nathan T, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Il Mariel, Paul K, Rocky Zim, Jessica A, Red Zippy, the TCS, Dopamine, Catch It, Eleanor, Ms. Tennant, AC Wilson, Eli W, Cassie K, Chumbaruni, Katilla, Josh Liu, Paint in PDX, Corey G, Foreverlast, Adrian. All of these folks, thank you so much for your ongoing and continued support. It's great to read those names and just think back about all the years that there's some folks on here who have been with us since the beginning. So thank you, everyone, and all. Check the link in the show note. There's a link tree, has links to all of the affiliates and to the Discord server and to our subscription pages. Thanks, John.
Thank you, David. And we will see you for the next hour of our shift next week.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com today.